Side 5, The Tommyknockers by Stephen King. Continuing on page 122. There could not be a tiny sun in the bottom of Bobby's hot water tank, nor a new gear on her tomcat, which suggested levitation. But it would have been easier for him to believe either of those things than to believe that Bobby had written a 400-page novel called The Buffalo Soldiers in the 3 weeks or so since Guard had last seen her, a novel that was just incidentally the best thing she had ever written. Impossible, yeah. Easier, hell, saner, to believe he had gone crazy and simply leave it at that. If only he could. Chapter 9. Anderson Spins a Tale. 1. Bobby was getting off the couch slowly, wincing like an old woman.
Bobby, Gardner began.
Christ, I ache all over, Anderson said. And I've got to change my... Never mind. How long did I sleep? Gardner glanced at his watch.
14 hours, I guess. A little more.
Bobby, your new book... Yeah, hold that until I get back. She walked slowly across the floor toward the bathroom, unbuttoning the shirt she'd slept in. As she hobbled toward the bathroom, Gardner got a good look, a better one than he wanted, actually, of just how much weight Bobby had lost. This went beyond scrawniness to the point of emaciation. She stopped, as if aware Gardner was looking at her, and without looking around, she said, "I can explain everything, you know."
"Can you?"
Gardner asked. 2. Anderson was in the bathroom a long time, much longer than it should have taken her to use the toilet and change her pad. Gardner was pretty sure that was what she'd gone to do. Her face just had that "I got the curse" look. He listened for the shower, but it wasn't running, and he began to feel uneasy. Bobby had seemed perfectly lucid when she woke up, but did that necessarily mean she was? Gardner began to have uncomfortable visions of Bobby wriggling out the bathroom window and then running off into the woods in nothing but blue jeans, cackling wildly. He put his right hand to the left side of his forehead where the scar was. His head had started to throb a little. He let another minute or two slip by, and then he got up and walked toward the bathroom, making an effort to step quietly that was not quite unconscious. Visions of Bobby escaping through the bathroom window to avoid explanations had been replaced by one of Bobby serenely cutting her throat with one of Guard's own razor blades to avoid explanations permanently. He decided he would just listen. If he heard normal-sounding movements, he would go on out to the kitchen and put on coffee, maybe scramble a few eggs. If he didn't hear anything... His worries were needless. The bathroom door hadn't latched when she closed it. And, other improvements aside, the unlatched doors in the place apparently still had their old way of swinging open. She'd probably have to shim up the whole north side of the house to do that. Maybe that was next week's project, he thought. The door had swung open enough for him to see Bobby standing at the mirror where Gardner had stood himself not long ago. She had her toothbrush in one hand and a tube of toothpaste in the other, but she hadn't uncapped the tube yet. She was looking into the mirror with an intensity that was almost hypnotic. Her lips were pulled back, her teeth bared. She caught movement in the mirror and turned around, making no particular effort to cover her wasted breasts. "Guard, do my teeth look all right to you?" Gardner looked at them. They looked to him about as they always had, although he couldn't remember ever having seen quite this much of them. He was reminded of that terrible photo of Karen Carpenter again.
"Sure."
He kept trying not to look at her stacked ribs, the painful jut of her pelvic bones above the waist of her jeans, which were drooping in spite of a belt cinched so tight it looked like a hobo's length of clothesline.
"I guess so."
He smiled cautiously.
"Look, Ma, no cavities."
Anderson tried to return Gardner's smile with her lips still pulled back to the gums. The result of this experiment was mildly grotesque. She put a forefinger on a molar and pressed.
"What?"
"Does it wiggle when I do that?"
No, not that I can see, anyway. Why?
It's just this dream I keep having. It.
She looked down at herself.
Get out of here, guard. I'm in disability.
Don't worry, Bobby. I wasn't going to jump your bones. Mostly because that'd be too close to what I'd really be doing.
Sorry, he said. Door was open. I thought you'd gone out.
He closed the door, latching it firmly.
Through it, she said clearly. I know what you're wondering.
He said nothing, only stood there. But he had a feeling she knew he was still there, as if she could see through the door.
You're wondering if I'm losing my mind?
No, he said then. No, Bobby, but...
I'm as sane as you are, Anderson said through the door. I'm so stiff I can hardly walk, and I've got an ace bandage wrapped around my right knee for some reason I can't quite remember, and I'm hungry as a bear, and I know I've lost too much weight, but I am sane, guard. I think you may have times before the day's over when you wonder if you are. The answer is we both are.
Bobby, what's happening here?
Gardner asked. It came out in a helpless sort of cry. I want to unwrap the goddamn ace bandage and see what's under it, Anderson said through the door. Feels like I've jobbed my knee pretty good. Out in the woods, probably. Then I want to take a hot shower and put on some clean clothes. While I do that, you could make us some breakfast, and I'll tell you everything.
Will you?
Yes.
Okay, Bobby.
I'm glad to have you here, guard, she said. I had a bad feeling once or twice, like maybe you weren't doing so good. Gardner felt his vision double, treble, then float away in prisms. He wiped an arm across his face.
No pain, no strain, he said. I'll make some breakfast.
Thanks, guard. He walked away, but he had to walk slow, because no matter how often he wiped his eyes, his vision kept trying to break up on him. 3. He stopped just inside the kitchen and went back to the closed bathroom door as a new thought occurred to him. Water was running in there now.
Where's Peter?
What? She called over the drumming shower.
I said, where's Peter?
He called, raising his voice. Dead, Bobby called back over the drumming water. I cried, guard, but he was, you know.
Old,
Gardner muttered, then remembered and raised his voice again.
It was old age, then?
Yes, Anderson called back over the drumming water. Gardner stood there for just a moment before going back to the kitchen, wondering why he believed Bobby was lying about Peter, and how he had died. 4. Guard scrambled eggs and fried bacon on Bobby's grill. He noticed that a microwave oven had been installed over the conventional one since he'd last been here, and there was now track lighting over the main work areas and the kitchen table, where Bobby was in the habit of eating most of her meals, usually with a book in her free hand. He made coffee, strong and black, and was just bringing everything to table when Bobby came in, wearing a fresh pair of cords and a T-shirt with a picture of a black fly on it and the legend, Maine State Bird. Her wet hair was wrapped in a towel. Anderson surveyed the table.
No toast?
She asked.
Make your own frigging toast,
Gardner said amiably.
I didn't hitchhike 200 miles to buttle your breakfast.
Anderson stared. You did what? Yesterday? In the rain?
Yeah.
What in God's name happened? Muriel said you were doing a reading tour and your last one was June 30th.
You called Muriel?
He was absurdly touched.
When?
Anderson flapped a hand as if that didn't matter. Probably it didn't. What happened? She asked again.
Gardner thought about telling her. Wanted to tell her, he realized, dismayed.
Was that what Bobby was for, then? Was Bobby Anderson really no more than the wall he wailed to? He hesitated, wanting to tell her, and didn't. There would be time for that later. Maybe. Later, he said. I want to know what happened here.
Breakfast first, Anderson said, and that's an order.
5. Gar gave Bobby most of the eggs and bacon, and Bobby didn't waste time. She went to them like a woman who hasn't eaten well for a long time. Watching her eat, Gardner remembered a biography of Thomas Edison he had read when he was quite young, no more than 10 or 11. Edison had gone on wild work jags in which idea had followed idea, invention had followed invention. During these spurts, he had ignored wife, children, baths, even food. If his wife hadn't brought in his meals on a tray, the man might literally have starved to death between the light bulb and the phonograph. There had been a picture of him, hands plunged into hair that was wildly awry, as if it had been actually trying to get at the brain beneath hair and skull, the brain which would not let him rest. And Gardner remembered thinking that the man looked quite insane. And, he thought, touching the left side of his forehead, Edison had been subject to migraines. Migraines and deep depressions. He saw no sign of depression in Bobby, however. She gobbled eggs, ate 7 or 8 slices of bacon wrapped in a slice of toast slathered with oleo, and swallowed 2 large glasses of orange juice. When she had finished, she uttered a resounding belch.
Gross, Bobby.
In Portugal, a good belch is considered a compliment to the cook.
What do they do after a good lay, fart?
Anderson threw her head back and roared with laughter. The towel fell off her hair, and all at once Gard wanted to take her to bed, bag of bones or not. Smiling a little, Gardner said,
Okay, it was good.
Thanks.
Some Sunday I'll make you some swell eggs Benedict. Now give.
Anderson reached behind him and brought down a half-full package of Camels. She lit one and pushed the pack toward Gardner.
No thanks. It's the only bad habit I ever succeeded in mostly giving up.
But before Bobby was done, Gardner had smoked 4 of them. 6. You looked around, Anderson said. I remember telling you to do that, just barely, and I know you did. You look like I felt after I found the thing in the woods.
What thing?
If I told you now, you'd think I was crazy. Later on, I'll show you, but right now I think we'd better just talk. Tell me what you saw around the place. What changes? So Gardner ticked them off. The cellar improvements, the litter of projects, the weird little sun and the water heater. The strange job of customizing on the Tomcat's engine. He hesitated for a moment, thinking of the addition to the shifting diagram, and let that go. He supposed Bobby knew he had seen it anyway.
And somewhere in the middle of all that, he said, you found time to write another book. A long one. I read the first 40 pages or so while I was waiting for you to wake up, and I think it's good as well as long. The best novel you've ever written, probably, and you've written some good ones.
Anderson was nodding. Please. Thank you. I think it is, too. She pointed to the last slice of bacon on the platter. You want that?
No.
Sure?
Yes.
She took it and made it gone.
How long did it take you to write it?
I'm not completely sure, Anderson said. Maybe 3 days. No more than a week, anyway. Did most of it in my sleep. Gard smiled. I'm not joking, you know. Anderson smiled. Gardner stopped, smiling. My time sense is pretty fucked up, she admitted. I do know I wasn't working on it the 27th. That's the last day when time, sequential time, seemed completely clear to me. You got here last night, July 4th, and it was done, so a week, max. But I really don't think it was more than 3 days. Gardner gaped. Anderson looked back, calmly wiping her fingers on a napkin.
Bobby, that's impossible,
Gardner said finally. If you think so, you missed my typewriter. Gardner had glanced at Bobby's old machine when he sat down, but that was all. His attention had been riveted immediately by the manuscript. He had seen the old black Underwood thousands of times. The manuscript, on the other hand, was new. If you'd looked closely, you would have seen the roll of computer paper on the wall behind it, and another of those gadgets behind it. Egg crate, heavy-duty batteries and all. What? These? She pushed the cigarettes across to Gardner, who took one. I don't know how it works, but then I don't really know how any of them work, including the one that's running all the juice in this place. She smiled at Gardner's expression. I'm off the central main power tit guard. I had them interrupt service. That's how they put it, as if they know damn well you'll want it back before too long. Let's see, 4 days ago. That I do remember. Bobby. There's a gadget like the thing in the water heater and the one behind my typewriter in the junction box out back, only that one's the granddaddy of them all. Anderson laughed. The laugh of a woman in the grip of pleasant reminiscences. There's 20 or 30 D-cells in that one. I think Polly Andrews down at Cooter's Market thinks I've gone nuts. I bought every battery he had in stock, and then I went to Augusta for more. Was that the day I got the dirt for the cellar? She addressed this last to herself, frowning. Then her face cleared. I think so, yeah. The historic battery run of 1988. Hit about 7 different stores, came back with hundreds of batteries, and then I stopped in Albion and got a truckload of loam to sweeten the cellar. I'm almost positive I did both of those things the same day. The troubled frown resurfaced, and for a moment Gardner thought Bobby looked scared and exhausted again. Of course, she was still exhausted. Exhaustion of the sort Gardner had seen last night went bone deep. A single night's sleep, no matter how long and deep, wouldn't erase it. And then there was this wild, hallucinatory talk. Books written in her sleep, all the AC current in the house being run by D-cells, runs to Augusta on crazy errands. Except that the proof was here, all around him. He had seen it. That one, Anderson said and laughed. What, Bobby? I said I had a devil of a job setting up the one that generates the juice here in the house and out at the dig. What dig? Is it the thing in the woods you want to show me? Yes, soon. Just give me a few more minutes. Anderson's face again assumed that look of pleasure in telling, and Gardner suddenly thought it must be the expression on the faces of all those who have tales they don't just want to tell, but tales they must tell. From the lecture hall bore who was part of an Antarctic expedition in 1937, and who still has his fading slides to prove it, to Ishmael the sailor man, late of the ill-fated Pequod, who finishes his tale with a sentence that seemed a desperate cry only thinly and perfunctorily disguised as information. Only I am left to tell you. Was it desperation and madness that Gardner detected beneath Bobby's cheerful, disjointed remembrances of 10 wacky days in Haven? Gardner thought so. Knew so. Who was better equipped to see the signs? Whatever Bobby had faced here while Gardner was reading poetry to overweight matrons and their bored husbands, it had nearly broken her mind. Anderson lit another cigarette with a hand that trembled slightly, making the match flame quiver momentarily. It was the sort of thing you would have seen only if you were looking for it. I was out of egg cartons by then, and the thing was going to have too many batteries for just one or two anyway, so I got one of Uncle Frank's cigar boxes. There must be a dozen old wooden ones up in the attic. Probably even Mabel Noyes down at Junkatorium would pay a few bucks for them, and you know what a skinflint she is. And I stuffed them with toilet paper and tried to make nests in the paper for the batteries to stand up in. You know, nests? Anderson made quick poking gestures with her right index finger, and then looked, bright-eyed, at Gard to see if he got it. Gardner nodded. That feeling of unreality was stealing back. That feeling of his mind getting ready to seep through the top of his skull and float up to the ceiling. A drunk would fix that, he thought, and the pulse in his head sharpened. But the batteries kept falling over anyway. She snuffed her cigarette and immediately lit another one. They were wild. Just wild. I was wild, too. Then I got an idea.
They?
I went down to Chip McCausland's, down on the dugout road. Gardner shook his head. He had never been down the dugout road. Well, he lives out there with this woman. She's his common-law wife, I guess, and about 10 kids. Man, you talk about sluts. The dirt on her neck, Gard, you couldn't wash it off unless you used a jackhammer on it first. I guess he was married before, and doesn't matter. It's just I haven't had anyone to talk to. I mean, they don't talk, not the way a couple of people do, and I keep mixing up the stuff that's not important with the stuff that is. Anderson's words had started to come out quicker and quicker, until now they were almost tripping over each other.
She's speed rapping,
Gardner thought with some alarm.
And pretty soon she's going to start either yelling or crying.
He didn't know which he dreaded more, and thought again of Ishmael. Ishmael rambling through the streets of Bedford, Massachusetts, stinking more of madness than whale oil, finally grabbing some unlucky passerby and screaming, "Listen, I'm the only fucking one left to tell you, and so you better listen, damn you! You better listen if you don't want to be using this harpoon for a fucking suppository! I got a tale to tell. It's about this white fucking whale, and you're going to listen!" He reached across the table and touched her hand.
"You tell it any old way you want to. I'm here, and I'm going to listen. We've got time. Like you said, it's your day off, so slow down. If I fall asleep, you'll know you got too far from the point, okay?"
Anderson smiled and relaxed, visibly. Gardner wanted to ask again what was going on in the woods. More than that, who they were. But it would be best to wait.
"All bad things come to him who waits,"
he thought. And after a pause to collect herself, Bobby went on. "Chip McCausland's got 3 or 4 hen houses. That's all I started to say. For a couple of bucks, I was able to get all the egg cartons I wanted, even a few of the big egg crate sheets. Those sheets each have 10 dozen cradles." Anderson laughed cheerfully and added something that brought goose flesh out on Gardner's skin. "Haven't used one of those yet. But when I do, I guess we'll have enough zap for the whole town of Haven to let go of the CMP tit, with enough left over for Albin and most of Troy as well. So, I got the power going here. Jesus, I'm rambling. And I already had the gadget hooked up to the typewriter, and I really did sleep. Napped, anyway, and that's about where we came in, isn't it?" Gardner nodded, still trying to cope with the idea that there might be fact as well as hallucination in Bobby's casual statement that she could build a gadget which could power 3 small towns from a source consisting of 120 D-cell batteries. "What the gadget on the typewriter does is..." Anderson frowned. Her head cocked a little, as if she were listening to a voice Gardner could not hear. "It might be easier to show you. Go on over there and roll in a sheet of paper, would you?"
"Okay."
He headed for the door into the living room, then looked back at Anderson.
"Aren't you coming?"
Bobby smiled. "I'll stay here," she said, and then Gardner got it. He got it, and even understood on some mental level, where only pure logic was allowed, that it might be so. Hadn't the immortal Holmes himself said that when you eliminated the impossible, you had to believe whatever was left, no matter how improbable? And there was a new novel sitting in there on the table by what Bobby sometimes called her word accordion.
"Yeah, except typewriters don't write books by themselves, Gard, old buddy. You know what the immortal Holmes probably would say? That the fact that there is a novel sitting next to Bobby's typewriter, and the added fact that this is a novel you never saw before does not mean it is a new novel. Holmes would say Bobby wrote that book at some time in the past. Then while you were gone and Bobby was losing her marbles, she brought it out and set it beside the typewriter. She may believe what she's telling you, but that doesn't make it so."
Gardner walked into the cluttered corner of the living room that served as Bobby's writing quarters. It was handy enough to the bookshelf, so she could simply rock back on the legs of her chair and grab almost anything she wanted.
"It's too good to be a trunk novel."
He knew what the immortal Holmes would say about that, too. He would agree that The Buffalo Soldiers being a trunk novel was improbable. He would argue, however, that writing a novel in 3 days, and not at the typewriter but while taking catnaps between repeated frenzies of activity, was im-fucking-possible. Except that novel hadn't come out of any trunk. Gardner knew it because he knew Bobby. Bobby would have been just as incapable of sticking a novel that good in her trunk as Gard was of remaining rational in a discussion on the subject of nuclear power.
"Fuck you, Sherlock, and the hansom cab you and Dr. W. rode in on. Christ, I want a drink."
The urge, the need to drink had come back in full frightening force. "You there, guard?" Anderson called.
"Yes."
This time he consciously saw the roll of computer paper. It hung down loosely. He looked behind the typewriter and did indeed see another of Bobby's gadgets. This one was smaller, half an egg carton with the last two egg cradles standing empty. These cells stood in the other four, each neatly capped with one of those little funnels. Looking at them more closely, guard decided they were scraps of tin can, carefully cut to shape with tin snips. Each with a wire coming out of the funnel over the positive post. One red, one blue, one yellow, one green. These went to another circuit board. This one, which looked as if it might have come from a radio, was held vertical by two short flat pieces of wood that had been glued to the desk with the board sandwiched in between. Those pieces of wood, each looking a little like the chalk gutter at the foot of a blackboard, were so absurdly familiar to Gardner that for a moment he was unable to identify them. Then it came. They were the tile holders you put your letters on when you were playing Scrabble. One single wire, almost as thick as an AC cord, ran from the circuit board into the typewriter. "Put in some paper," Anderson called. She laughed. "That was the part I almost forgot. Isn't that stupid? They were no help there, and I almost went crazy before I saw the answer. I was sitting on the jakes one day, wishing I'd gotten one of those damned word crunchers after all, and when I reached for the toilet paper, eureka! Boy, did I feel dumb! Just roll it in, guard."
"No. I'm getting out of here right now, and then I'm going to hitch a ride up to the Purple Cow in Hamden and get so fucking drunk I'll never remember this stuff. I don't ever want to know who they are."
Instead, he pulled on the roll, slipped the perforated end of the first sheet under the roller, and turned the knob on the side of the old machine until he could snap the bar down. His heart was beating hard and fast.
"Okay," he called. "Do you want me to, turn something on?"
He didn't see any switch, and even if he had, he wouldn't have wanted to touch it. "Don't need to," she called back. Guard heard a click. It was followed by a hum, the sound of a kid's electric train transformer. Green light began to spill out of Anderson's typewriter. Gardner took an involuntary, shambling step backward on legs that felt like stilts. That light rayed out between the keys in weird, diverging strokes. There were glass panels set into the Underwood's sides, and now they glowed like the walls of an aquarium. Suddenly the keys of the typewriter began to depress themselves, moving up and down like the keys of a player piano. The carriage moved rapidly, and letters spilled across the page. "Full fathom five, my father lies." Ding, bang, the carriage returned.
"No. I'm not seeing this. I don't believe I'm seeing this."
These are the pearls that were his eyes. Sickly green light spilling up through the keyboard and over the words like radium. Ding, bang. "My beer is Rheingold, the dry beer." The line appeared in the space of a second, it seemed. The keys were a hammering blur of speed. It was like watching a news ticker. "Think of Rheingold whenever you buy beer."
Dear God, is she really doing this? Or is it a trick?
With his mind tottering again in the face of this new wonder, he found himself grasping eagerly for Sherlock Holmes. A trick. Of course it was a trick, all part of poor old Bobby's nervous breakdown, her very creative nervous breakdown. Ding, bang, the carriage shot back. No trick, guard. The carriage returned and the hammering keys typed this before his wide staring eyes. "You were right the first time. I'm doing it from the kitchen. The gadget behind the typewriter is thought sensitive, the way a photoelectric cell is light sensitive. This thing seems to pick up my thoughts clearly up to a distance of 5 miles. If I'm further away than that, things start to get garbled. Beyond 10 or so, it doesn't work at all." Ding, bang, the big silver lever to the left of the carriage worked itself twice, cranking the paper, which now held three perfectly typed messages, up a few lines. Then it resumed.